Most of the comments that I had prepared about Mother Jamuna were already expressed in the reading from the GBC earlier, so. But I did want to focus on what it was that actually attracted people to Srila Prabhupada so much in those times, because you have to kind of look back. There were no temples. There was no Mangal Artik. There was no deity worship. There was just a storefront and a little elderly Indian gentleman in one section speaking and chanting this Hare Krishna mantra. And that was the sum total of ISKCON at the time, and it must have been a surprise in 1966 to hear it given this magnificent, grandiloquent, you could say, title, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. You know, it's a leap of faith that is very sort of hard to appreciate at this particular point in time, but at then it must have seemed quite odd, and it certainly certainly still seems quite odd to many people in Western society what exactly the Hare Krishna movement is and how it developed or how it attracts people and so on. So the one of the most important aspects, of course, that Srila Prabhupada brought was a philosophy. And this philosophy embodied in the Bhagavad Gita is timeless, it is eternal, it is without comparison. It is all-encompassing. And so this is actually, and if we simply examine the first ABC teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, from the very beginning in Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, text 12, natvevahang jatu nasham, natvang neme janadi pa, that never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings here present. And within the next 9 shlokas, all is explained regarding the nature of the soul, the nature of the spirit, the nature of the personality of the living entity, up to Vasangsi Jirnani Yita Vihaya, that as a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, the soul similarly accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones. So simply within those 9 shlokas, you know, is described what happens, that the soul cannot be burned by fire, it cannot be cut by the sword, it cannot be withered by the wind. That what is important, there's another shloka, nasato vidyate bhavo, that what is eternal, that is what is important, and that is real, and what is temporary, that is unreal. So in that sense, just in those few shlokas, there is the nutshell of exactly what is the human condition, what is our situation here. And so this, beginning from these ABCs, you see the relationship between God and man. And from there, the Bhagavad Gita branches out, and the Bhagavatam branches out into the organization of civilized society, the morals and ethics of correct and incorrect action. And if one goes further into the Srimad Bhagavatam and other literature, one sees that this culture produced science and mathematics that are only being appreciated today due to modern advances. I was just looking at one article where it described that in the 1100s there was an acharya of astronomy who understood, who could explain the speed of light, and who also explained the laws of gravity 400 years before Sir Isaac Newton. And this is at a time where the Vedic culture had already degraded due to Kali Yuga and many of the original understandings of the science and mathematics of because had already been lost, you might say. And it's just like there was a very nice when we were first involved in Krishna consciousness, where once in the description of science and philosophy, where someone pointed out that actually philosophy is the science of science. That without a philosophy, you cannot actually postulate what the theories are that you are trying to prove by the scientific method. Because a scientist, he comes up with a theory. He says that DNA causes this, that, the other thing. And then with that theory, then he goes to the microscopes and he goes to whatever other material inventions that he has to examine these things, and he creates experiments that show that a particular, yes, this is actually correct. If I make such and such an experiment, it can be duplicated anywhere and everywhere in the world. That is what science is. And so, but without a basic theory, you cannot approach science. You cannot use science without a basic theory. So in this sense, the scientists, they have to have a philosophy. Unfortunately, in many instances, their philosophy is one of atheism, but they do have theories. And these theories have existed from time immemorial, practically. One understands that atheistic theory is not a new thing. It existed among the ancient Greeks, and it existed in Vedic times. There was an atheist by the name of Charvaka Muni. He was even given the title of a Muni. Muni means a philosopher, and the distinction of a Muni is that he has a different theory than everybody else, and therefore he has this distinction that he has. Just as in the West we have different philosophers like Hegel and Kant and Schopenhauer, all these different philosophers are there. And why are they distinct? They're distinct because they have a different idea of what is going on. And they have a logic and they have a reason. And this logic and reason, this is basically what distinguishes, their logic and reason distinguishes their philosophy. So in the same way, Vedic literature has had philosophy and logic and reason from time immemorial. One looks that there are actually six different areas of Vedic philosophy. There are six different philosophies of the different sages. You have Nyaya, you have Vaisheshika, you have Sankhya, and so on. So there are six different philosophies, Karma Mimamsa. And according to different points that philosophers try to make, they try to prove their theory, through logic and reason. But we understand, and this was one of the wonderful, that as much as one may be able to appreciate these ABCs of Krishna consciousness, what are the practical ABCs of Krishna consciousness? How does one actually put this theory into practice? And here, of course, we're following in the footsteps of the acharyas in the Gaudiya line, the six Goswamis, and basically it boils down to the ABC of Krishna conscious practice is from that the great shloka, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nastyeva, 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 Gatir Anyata. So this chanting of the holy name alone, is the path, the gati, the path, the Sanskrit word gati means the pathway to spiritual realization and spiritual liberation. So, and in this age of Kali Kalal, Nastyeva, Nastyeva, Nastyeva. There is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way. This repetition is also very important. And so, Devotees coming into contact with the Maha Mantra in the early days, it's now 45 years ago, if you think of that, there's two generations have passed since Prabhupada first introduced this chanting in New York City. And it has managed to develop in such a way because of this chanting. Because it's by the practical application of this chanting. And it's described in the literature that there are two kinds of devotees, you might say, and two kinds of chanting. The first is the chanting, the Sankirtan, the congregational chanting of the holy names in large groups, which is a very wonderful expression of spiritual life. And the other is by japa, by personal chanting and hearing of the holy name in one's private and personal sadhana practice of Krishna consciousness. So it's also described that there are two kinds of devotees that practice. There are the Gostyanandis and the Bhajananandis. And the Bhajananandis, they practice in solitude. They are like the yogis, you might say, of Krishna consciousness. And in that sense, one can look at the careers of, or the lifestyles of devotees like Haridas Thakur, who would chant 300,000 names daily. So you can see that 300,000 names daily, you don't have much time for anything else. There's a minimum of rest and a little bit of eating and simply chanting and simply being involved in the holy name. And this is a very rare individual who can practice like this. And then there are the Gostyanandis, who are the preachers of Krishna consciousness. And their practice is to bring the message of Lord Chaitanya all over the world. So Lord Chaitanya explained, Prithivityache Yata Nagar Adigram Sarvatra Prachar Haila Moranam, that my name will be heard in every town and village in the world. And at the time, and even for hundreds of years after this, he had expressed this, there was always great wonder as to how this would happen. And fortunately, we are the recipients of the of this understanding, this Gostyanandi understanding of Krishna consciousness, that Srila Prabhupada brought this movement on the order of his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, who had made some attempts previously in the 1920s and 30s to bring Krishna consciousness to the West. And somehow the time was not right, it was not propitious, it was not the time. And when Srila Prabhupada came, it was the time. And actually there was one, so one can see that devotees who took up this Krishna conscious practice at such an early time, where there was nothing, there was no particular institution, you might say, or congregation or fellowship of so many devotees, that this they developed amongst themselves in the very early days in New York City and in San Francisco, when we hear the stories of Mother Jamuna, where she joined in San Francisco in the 1967, at a time when this country was going through some interesting developments, social developments of the country, and interesting social media was happening. It was related to music. Anybody who was there at the time, although the joke is that if you were there and you remember, you weren't there. But on the other hand, the fact is that there was a nice, when I was at the archives, I happened to see some of the transcripts that were of tape recordings of people who met Srila Prabhupada or met the devotees at that time. And one was a filmmaker by the name of Bob Giorgio. And anyway, so if you've ever seen the movies that have come out on the Hippie Hill thing, this man, he was the filmmaker of those events at the time. And so he said, when I saw this scene of the devotees and the devotees, he said it was like a whirlpool. There was this whirlpool of people who would join the whirlpool, and then gradually they would spin out of the whirlpool. And this was how, while this music was going on, while this chanting was going on. And he said, so this was very fascinating to me. He had actually come to Golden Gate Park that day not to film the devotees at all. He'd come to film some nature, some flowers and trees and plants. This was his interest as a filmmaker, was to film these things. But he came upon this scene of the devotees chanting. And so he was very fascinated by this. And he asked the devotees, who's in charge? You know, who does this? And they said, oh, the Swamis, you know. So, he was very interested. He said, can I come and see the Swami, you know? Yeah, sure, you know, anytime. You know, so he made an appointment and he came. And he said what struck him was that when he entered the room and he expected, you know, something, there was this gentleman. There was no furniture in the room. There was no tables, no chairs, no bed, no nothing. It was just Prabhupada sitting in a little cushion. And in front of him was his trunk that he had, where he would have his books. And that was it. That was the whole scene of someone who was doing something really revolutionary in Golden Gate Park. It was really happening. And this was very striking to him. So this is the leap of faith that devotees had at the time, that someone who had nothing, basically, was able to propel such an outpouring of emotion and feeling and spirituality. You know, it's a very very nice description. So when I think of Jamuna and the devotees who started at that time, this is the idea that I have, that how much faith they must have had in Srila Prabhupada and his words. And there wasn't even Bhagavad Gita as it is at that time. There were just the three volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam, printed rather poorly on Indian presses, and with many typos and errors. And yet this was propelling this movement of Krishna consciousness. So so Lord Chaitanya, we can see, wanted his followers to move all over the world and preach in every town and village. And so that is our legacy. This is what has been left to us. And it's not just that that we have a simple thing. Prabhupada also made facilities for all kinds of devotees to actually further their Krishna consciousness. When we look at the two paths of bhakti yoga, the Bhagavat Marg, and also the deity worship path, the Pancharatriki Vidhi, that these two things are combined. And Prabhupada said they're like railroad tracks. You know, you can't have one without the other. You cannot have pure movement of Krishna consciousness preaching and spreading the word all over the world without having the other track of purity of mind and heart and soul. And this we are able to understand from this temple worship. And it's actually very interesting that up until the time of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, there were no institutions as such. there were temples and there were mats. In other words, there were places of public worship, like where the deities were worshipped, and otherwise there were mats that were like monasteries. Those were the two, vehicles for propagation of Krishna consciousness. And now we see in this time, we have a society where many different things go on, whether it's restaurants or retreats, or and as well as having this temple, these temple establishments. And of course, people criticize that, oh, you become an institution, and therefore there are problems running institutions because of bureaucracies and things like this. But this is a minor feature of Krishna consciousness, of the true life of the devotees. The true life of the devotees we can see is on an occasion like this, where we are together here, both to chant the holy name, to worship the deity, to honor previous devotees who have come before us and who have contributed so much to this tradition. And if you look at the history of Mother Jamuna and her group, who went, first of all, they started the San Francisco Temple. After that, they went to London, to England, and started the temple there. From their preaching came the association with the Beatles and the production of the Radha Krishna Temple album. The Radha Krishna Temple album, you can say, was one of the most important vehicles for spreading Krishna consciousness throughout the world. It gained an audience in Europe and the Americas, and devotees actually went out and did kind of mini concerts, you could say, as the Radha Krishna Temple at the time. And that association with the Beatles led to, again, the My Sweet Lord hit of George Harrison, which further propelled the Hare Krishna mantra. It's a nice, there was a nice comment by Mukunda Maharaj, where he said that, when we made the Radha Krishna Temple album, we didn't expect it to go anywhere. We didn't expect it to be popular, We just, George wanted, we wanted to do it, and George wanted to do it as well. And so not only, of course, will Jamuna's voice be heard wherever there is an ISKCON temple, and George Harrison's guitar playing in the background will also be heard for many thousands of years, probably, as we understand this. So that is the wonderful expression of their enjoyment, you might say, of spiritual life. If you look at there's a nice thing of, I was looking at the definition of the word Mahatma. As Mahatma is a popular word now because of the Mahatma Gandhi and his activities. And so we are presenting what it is that real Mahatmas actually do. And in the Bhagavad Gita, it describes that Mahatma that Bahunam Janmanamante Gyanavan Mam Prapadyantes. This is that after many, many births, those who are in knowledge, those who have true knowledge, they accept Krishna. And so we have to understand that these devotees who came at that time, we can understand, and with that, their faith is a reflection of the fact that for many lives, for many previous lives, they had knowledge of this philosophy. They were Gyanavan. That is how we see. And that is why we can see that not so many people, at least in this era, do not come so readily to Krishna consciousness. It is a process of many, many births. And so, actually, Srila Prabhupada once said of his followers that his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, had sent these followers to help him spread Krishna consciousness. So we can know that anyone who takes to Krishna consciousness, to this chanting of Hare Krishna, is a great soul, is a Mahatma, and it is a very rare thing. And so these are some of the reflections that I had on this day. I had also prepared a lot on what is the definition of civilized society and so on, because civilized society follows the Mahatmas and so on. But the time is short, so I'd like to ask if anyone has any questions or any comments to contribute. Thank you. Yes, Prabhu. Yes.
She had so much devotion to the deity worship. And also the bhajans. Prabhupada personally taught her some bhajans, and she had a great appreciation of them, which is one part of Prabhupada's life that I don't really think is so much present in this kind of now. But she had an appreciation of these bhajans. And she would organize seminars where they would chant every bhajan.
The bhajans, yes. There's a nice description. Yadubar Prabhu, who was he and Vishakha were two of the main photographers for ISKCON, and he said sometimes Prabhupada would just bring out the harmonium and just start chanting, and there's some really striking pictures of Prabhupada. He's without a shirt on, and he's playing the harmonium, and the facial expression is just incredible, incredibly moving. These pictures were some of the things that I remember from the archival work that I did, cataloging all these pictures of Srila Prabhupada. And so we don't think that of Srila Prabhupada just sitting down. You know, one thinks of Srila Prabhupada doing the books and running the society and kind of being that kind of active preacher, but he also had very intense personal, you know, spiritual realizations that came through the practice of bhajans like that. And just an aside on one group of pictures, and I was really surprised when because there's a very, where Prabhupada is in a very contemplative mood, and his hands are here, and he's looking, and it seemed like he's in deep meditation, a very intense going on. So I pointed out these pictures to Yadubar, who had taken these pictures, you know, and Yadubar said, "Yeah, I remember that." Actually, what was happening at the time is that devotees were complaining about other devotees at the time. And so, you know, so Prabhupada had to put up with a lot, you know, in the running of the society. And he was very, very intensely focused, you can say, in his personal feeling. Because we understand that he was never not in touch with Krishna. And he even said that. Never was there a time when I forgot about Krishna. I was never forgetting about Krishna ever in his whole life. So that mood that devotees have to somehow reach out and somehow get the mercy of Krishna and try to surrender to the lotus feet of Krishna, to surrender to Srila Prabhupada's instructions and try to become good devotees, that is a great blessing. Yes. Yes.
Sometimes he would call
her in and have her also play. So who can imagine
the level that she was on?
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.